So we'll start off in Joshua 10. So this is going to be some lessons in Joshua. And in Hebrew, the name Joshua is pronounced Yahushua. So it's the same as Jesus. His name was Hosea, which means salvation, and Moses changed it, or actually Yahweh told Moses to change it, to not just salvation, because that could be Allah's salvation, that could be Nimrod's salvation. Fill a blank, but anyway, no, let's get real specific here, Yahweh's salvation. Make sure you're sitting up, okay? Okay? I'll do a lot of the reading tonight. It's page 244 in the Rotherham, okay? Here, let's get ready. Now, where we are right here, before we start reading chapter 10, verse 1, I'm going to read about 25 verses. Where are we? So it's kind of nice to have some things summed up. Yahweh told Pharaoh that Israel was his firstborn son, and you have my son in slavery. He goes, give me my son, or there's going to be consequences. And he warned him. And he also warned Moses, he's not going to give in. But give me my son. Can you imagine if somebody took your son hostage? If somebody took my son hostage, woo, did you even give him a warning? I don't know if I would be able to give him a warning. You guys all got to die. But here's Yahweh going, you have my firstborn son, Israel. Give him to me. I know what you've been doing to him. You've been killing him. They've been and all these horrible things, throwing babies to the crocodiles, murdering children, all the horrible things you can imagine. And Pharaoh says, no. And then you go, this war that goes down, the 10 plagues, the showdown, this nuclear war happens. What happens after this? They have an 11 days journey to go into the promised land. Yahweh says, I'm going to take my firstborn son and give him the land flowing of milk and honey. Why? Well, the whole earth belongs to Yahweh. It's my land. And the people who are living on my land right now, there's cockroaches, skunks, rattlesnakes, think of something nasty. Black widows, and they're on my land, it's the best land, I gotta go, you guys are gonna get it. And then they get ready to cross, they're gonna go 11 days journey, but what do? They have the battered wife syndrome. Oh, all we know is what's behind us. I'm gonna go back to my husband's because this is what I know. And you see, they call it a battered wife syndrome. When they don't know what the future is, they always want to go back to what they know. They wanted to go back to Egypt. They're forgetting all the rest of this stuff. And Yahweh says, just because of your guys' unbelief, you will not get the best land, but your children will. For 40 years, they wandered in the desert with no food, no water, no shelter. You would have froze at night. There's no food to get a fire going to keep you warm. Yahweh provided for them. And though their mother and their father would have worried every night whether they're going to get manna the next day, I'm fully convinced that the rebellious generation that was led out of Israel probably was never content. And they probably said, well, of course Yahweh's going to feed us tomorrow. He's Yahweh. Had they believed, they probably would have went into the land of promise. These people probably would have had ulcers. Here's mom and dad going, oh, he fed us for 29 years, but could he do 30? And here are these kids going, mom and dad are stressed out about the manna. What's wrong with mom and dad? So for 40 years, this whole thing is going on. And what was also happening for 40 years? Yahweh was warning all the people in the land of Canaan. Yeah, they had a 40-year notice, an eviction notice. Here's an eviction notice. If your bank owns your house, especially if you have a house where you didn't put anything down on it, the bank goes, we're coming for our house. You got 30-day notice. And if somebody decided not to leave the house, guess what's going to happen? Whoa, what do I have to do by force? But you got to get out. For 40 years, they were warned. Israel's coming. They heard about the wars that they did also. They go, Israel, they've killed all kinds of things. And the people in the land of Canaan go, it's not about Israel. It's about Israel's God. Because these people are nothing. These guys could have been farmers. They could have been tax collectors, fishermen, or whatever. They weren't necessarily warriors, but it didn't matter. It was who stood behind them. You can imagine if Iron Man walked wherever you went. Mm-hmm. Or Superman. I saw that once when I was in the ghetto. I saw this little girl walking down the street with it looked like a 500-pound pit bull and a Rottweiler. Where did she go? Anywhere she wants. Yeah. And she did. And I looked at that, and so here's Yahweh following Israel, and everybody watched. And how do we know that they knew about this? Because when they did cross the Jordan, Rahab, the harlot, goes, we heard about you guys, and this Elohim, the one invisible Elohim, who's jealous, who wiped out Egypt. And so all these people knew about this. So what happened was, which was a neat story, as I kind of doing this little summary about the stories from Yehoshua. They go into Jericho. All the walls fall down. They get the booty. They get everything. They go to Ai. They learn that you can't stand before your enemies with sin. What a great lesson for all of us. You're getting ready to go into war. You got to stand in your life. You better take care of it. Learn what happened with Ai. And then what happens next? A land called Gibeon comes to them and says, hey, we've been warned for 40 years. The owner of this land is coming to get us. And even if we don't agree that he's the owner of this land, we saw what he did to Egypt. He warned us. The same destruction that happened to Egypt is going to happen to us here. So you with the Gibeonites decided? Okay, can we fight against an Elohim who can split the Red Sea? Can we fight against an Elohim who can do fire for 40 years that can feed his children 3 days, 3 meals a day? I don't think we can fight those guys. So what are we going to do? Woo! I'll never surrender! So maybe some people say, we'll never surrender. Some other guys go, hey, you know what? Why don't we just work for them? The new landlord's coming in. So the Gibeonites, they came. They tricked Joshua. They said they weren't from the land of Canaan. And they go, and they said, we just want to work for you guys, basically. I mean, that's not exactly what was happening. So, and Joshua says, fine, you'll be our slave. But in the Gibeonites' eyes, is it better to be dead or to work for the people that live in the land now? Are they still in the land of milk and honey?
Yeah.
Is it a nice land? Yeah. So you could stay in Beverly Hills, but the title's going to these new people. Okay, so what's the catch? Well, you get to be the gardeners and the pool people. They're like, okay. So they did good. And so here they go, hey, we get to keep the land of milk and honey, and now we're going to work for these guys. We didn't get annihilated. Now here's what happens next. The rest of the people in Yahweh's land of Canaan, guess what they decide? How evil are these people? These people, it'd be real interesting if you read about the land of Canaan and what Satan was doing with people, according to E.W. Bolinger, is the land of Canaan was already promised to Abraham. And E.W. Bolinger believed that Satan did it like an outbreak of giants, all these wicked things, because he knew that the promised seed was going to come through there. What do? They joined a confederacy. Five kings get together and they go, and what they do is they say, what we're going to do, we're going to find out what these five kings were going to do. Make sure you're sitting up, Kate. Or you can sit in another chair. Chapter 10, verse 1. It was really neat about E.W. Bolinger. Okay, does anybody know what peace is in Hebrew?
Shalom.
Shalom? Anybody have an idea? This isn't a trick question. What does Jerusalem mean? It's got peace in it.
Peace of hell.
Salem.
Hell.
E.W. Bolinger says Jerusalem equals vision of peace.
Oh.
Where are we going? The New Jerusalem. Isn't that neat? If you find about Jerusalem, Jerusalem is not a peaceful city. The people that live there, they're evil. And then they got to go to war to get this city. But before we even read it, it says, and it came to pass when Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, heard of Yehoshua had captured Ai and devoted it to destruction, as he had done to Jericho and her king, so had he done with Ai and her king. And the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and had come into their midst. Isn't that neat? Because all that's a grammatical inversion. Then feared they greatly because Gibeon was a great city, as in one of the royal cities, and because it was greater than Ai. And all the men thereof, remember Ai won a battle, right? They didn't win a battle. And a city even greater than Ai goes, we will be your slaves. Can you imagine if Great Britain says, we will be a slave to another country? Are you kidding me? Great Britain? That would get our attention, wouldn't it? You can have all our land. We are now your servants. So what do? They feared. Verse 3. Therefore sent Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, unto Hoham, king of Hebron, and Piram, king of Jarmuth, and unto Japhia, king of Lachish, and unto Debir, king of Eglon, saying, come up unto me and help me, that we may smite Gibeon, for he had made peace with Yehoshua, and with the sons of Israel. So they gathered themselves together and came up, even the five kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, the king of Eglon, they and all their hosts, and encamped near Gibeon and made war against it. It was really neat. My brother worked for a land manager. He owned all this property, and the land manager owned all the property. He was getting paid to take people hunting. And they decided that they're going to build a cabin. He was paying for the people coming to hunt. He was paying for them to go to a hotel. He goes, wouldn't it be nice if they just had a cabin here? See, what they did, they started building an incredible cabin. So my brother got to do all this work. And it was a concrete floor, and they decided to heat the concrete floor. So I don't know how much money was spent, a lot of money on this cabin. And with the concrete floor, that's one of the problems with like if you walk out into the garage, is it cold if you're barefoot? Mm-hmm. He heated it. Pumped hot water through the whole thing. How nice is that? Mm-hmm. Pretty neat, right?
Yeah.
There's one problem with it, though. He didn't realize that the land he owned was infected by copperhead snakes. Very rare, actually, for this part of the United States. And what happened was, after one of the hunters came there to visit, he complained that he almost stepped on a copperhead when he came out, because with the copperheads, what do they want?
Warmth.
And the front porch of the cabin he just built was a perfect warming pad for a arguably deadly snake. I go, what kind of host is this? You got copperheads out here. My brother didn't believe it was a copperhead because they're very rare around this part of the world, or this part of the United States. He went out, and guess what? It was a copperhead. He calls me up. I go and identify it. That was one of my hobbies, like a herpetologist. I go, it is a copperhead. They end up killing like 50 copperheads around one cabin. And you have the copperheads? They kept trying to take over the cabin. They wanted that heat. And is there any... Because you just say, hey, copperhead, I tell you what. We don't want to kill you. You probably don't really want to kill us. Why don't you stay on your side of the fence? We'll stay on our side of the fence. Do you think a copperhead would do that? Neither would a rattlesnake. Neither would a cobra. There's one way to deal with them. They had to kill them. And so here's Yahweh's land. And he goes... Kids, here you go. They're trusting him. Here they are. And there's copperheads and rattlesnakes and cockroaches and skunks everywhere. And the kids go, we want to go in there, but the skunks will get you. If the skunks don't get you, the rattlesnakes will get you. And Yahweh goes, get rid of them. What? I've already warned all the skunks and the rattlesnakes and the whatever they are to get out. Well, they said they're not going to get out. So this is what the five kings said. We're not moving. So who are the five kings choosing to fight?
Yahweh.
Kind of sounds a lot like Islam, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I bet you their religion was just like Islam also. This says if you die in war, it's an automatic way to heaven, because these guys just signed their own death sentence. And so, oh, you're going to fight Yahweh. Okay, good luck with that one. We'll find out what's going to happen to them. Maybe they'll win. And so verse 4, come up with me and help me that we may smite Gibeon, for it hath made peace with Joshua and the sons of Israel. So they gathered themselves together and came up, the five kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, the king of Jarmuth, or king of Eglon. I think Eglon might have been like the giants, by the way. They and all their hosts, and they encamped near Gibeon and made war against who? Yeah. They made war against Gibeon. That's Cayman's
alarm clock. Like, what? I thought I saw it. Shouldn't go back off again.
And who did they attack? They didn't attack Yahweh directly, but they're thinking, we're going to attack Gibeon. We're going to get these guys. Let me see here. Where is it? Verse 6?
Yeah.
So the men of Gibeon sent unto Joshua and unto the camp of Gilgal, saying, these are real interesting people, aren't they? Rahab made a choice. I want you. So did Ruth made a choice. Who is the creator? Well, his name is Yahweh. I've never heard of his name. But this, he owns all this? Yeah. Well, tell me about him. Well, he loves you so much, he asks his only begotten son to die the death of the cross so that you can go to paradise. This earth's going to go away. There's going to be another earth. It's going to be the Garden of Eden. It's going to be paradise. Every tear is going to be wiped away. You'll have pet lions and tigers. I believe the dinosaurs will be there. How neat will that be? Having dinosaurs in your backyard? Watch out for that poop. you might have to have a backhoe to clean some of that up. But anyways, they go, really? That's where you're going? Yeah. Well, and then they go, can you give me an illustration that your religion is real? And you go, well, the book of Acts says every believer is given a sign. What is it? They go, what language was that? Where did you learn it? I didn't learn it. Every Christian comes. Factory installed. Your own language. A language of men or of angels. What did you just say? I have no idea. Why did you do it? Well, that's interesting because 1 Corinthians 14 says, I just built myself up like Peter did on the day of Pentecost. It also says I pray perfectly. They go, wow, that could be really convenient. They go, have you ever knew what you're supposed to do? And your problem wasn't that you already know it's wrong. The problem is you don't have the strength not to do it again. Stop picking on your little sister. Oh, I know what I'm going to do wrong. Stop picking on your little sister. Speak in tongues over it. So I digress. I come back. But anyways, Gibeon, they just chose, here's Yahweh. Just like anybody who would have put the blood post of the lamb over their doorpost in Egypt. Where was I? Verse 7?
6b.
6b. Thank you. Come unto us quickly and save us and help us, for the king of the Amorites that dwell in the hill country are gathered together against us. So Yehoshua, Joshua, went up to Gilgal. He and all the people of war with him, even as a mighty man of valor. And Yahweh said unto Yehoshua, do not fear because of them, for unto thy hand I have delivered them. Not a man of them shall stand before thee. Isn't that neat? Mm-hmm. Josh was kind of in an unusual spot here. They went to war in Ai. He did not get counsel. David learned from Joshua. David always got counsel from Yahweh. Before he went to war, he goes, is everything okay? Then Joshua was learning. He went to Ai, they went to war, and there was sin in the camp, and 23 people, I believe, died. Okay, so then they make a covenant with Gibeon. They're supposed to wipe these guys out. What do we do now? And now Gibeon gets attacked. What do we do? Does Joshua know what to do? Not necessarily. Well, where does he go? He goes to Yahweh. Yahweh goes, don't fear. I've given all them into your hand. So Joshua came in unto them suddenly. All the night came up from Gilgal. When did he come up?
At night.
At night. Now, if we turn off all the lights in my basement, and we told you to go to a knife fight in the dark, and there's people, this whole room's filled, would that be wise to go to a knife fight in the dark when you can't see anything to fight somebody else? He went at night. How can you go at night? You don't travel at night. Even George Washington, they didn't even fight during the winter. You don't fight at night. You can't see anything. They don't have smartphones going, where are my keys? Oh, there it is. You got your phone out. They don't have flashlights. They don't have these necessary torches. You can't fight with torches. You can't go to war if you can't see. Here, I got an idea. Elijah, I want you to box Isaiah, except you have to close your eyes. Time out. When can you go to war at night? When you have NVGs, night vision goggles, and Yahweh. Here's Joshua. He went to war at night. Yahweh could see in the dark. Can't he? And Yahweh confused them. Something real interesting about verse 10. When they went to war at night, went to go attack them. I mean, you guys ever been camping where you don't have any flashlights?
Mm-hmm.
It can be really dangerous. You can, Izzy and I went out, we're hunting, and you start walking around in unknown areas at night, you might break your leg. You just don't go walking around without flashlights. And here they're out at night. And it says, Yahweh confused them. Very interesting word, this confusion. This word right here, Strong's number 1949, and it's the Theological Word Study of the Old Testament, 486. Do you know what Young's literal translation says? Crushed them. So Yahweh crushed them. So it says, and Yahweh confused them, or crushed them before Israel, and smote them a great slaughter at Gibeon, and chased them along the way that goeth up to Beth Horon, and smote them as far as Azekah, and as far as Makkadah. And it came to pass when they fled before Israel, they being on the slope of Beth Horon, that Yahweh cast down upon them great stones out of the heavens as far as Azekah. And they died more were they who died by the hailstones than they whom the sons of Israel with the sword. Yahweh told Moses, we're going to do it together. He got some. My brother told me that he was going to be getting rid of some copperhead snakes. You know how excited I got? Are you serious? You're going to get to go hunt some copperheads and kill some dangerous snakes? Man, do you think I get some bragging rights out of that? What were you doing today? Just killing copperheads. Yeah, I killed about 15. I love storytelling. What does Yahweh do? After Joshua moves forward and goes to fight at night, Yahweh joins in. He starts crushing them, and now they're in confusion. You ever seen Transformers, when the big aliens are coming out of the sky? The buildings are getting knocked over. How are the people running around? So here's the five kings. They're all running around. And Yahweh decides to start throwing rocks. It looks like they're going to have too much fun. How many here know that Yahweh's a good shot? Do you think he's a good shot or a bad shot?
Good shot.
You think he's a good shot?
Good shot. Yeah.
And what did he throw? He threw great stones at them. Boom! You can rock as big as a house. That was a little overkill. Yeah, it's my style. They're running around. How neat is that? Yahweh didn't let Joshua have all the fun. So they go to war and throw on the rocks. And here's another really interesting thing about this. Do you know what else? You know what else it says? With how about Melania? You read verse B, 11B. We're on page 245. Heavens as far as Azkah. Do you see that up there?
B.
Yeah. No. Just where it says heavens. Right above 12.
Yeah.
What's it say?
Heavens as far as Azkah, and they died. More were they died by hailstones than whom sons of Israel slew by the sword.
Okay, who wrote this book?
Yahweh
wrote this. And not only did he kill these guys, he kept score. He said, I won. I got more than you. Did you ever see that in Lord of the Rings where the dwarf and Legolas are killing the bad guys? And instead of being intimidated by the orc and the goblins, they're counting. And they're cutting them. And then Legolas kills one of the big gigantic elephants. The dwarf goes, that still counts as one! They're not even distracted. They're counting how many they got. And Yahweh goes, I won that competition. Isn't that neat? Yahweh kept count. Well, he's too big for these. And here's the one that wrote it down. Great job. I love your work. I like your style. Man, he's keeping count. How neat is that? Then spake Yehoshua unto Yahweh on the day when Yahweh delivered the Amorites before the sons of Israel. Yea, he said unto the presence of Israel, thou sun in Gibeon, be still, and thou moon in the vale of Ajalon. So the sun was still, and the moon stayed, until a nation should be avenged by its foes. Is not that written in the book of the upright? So then the sun stayed in the middle of the heavens, and hastened not to go in about a whole day. And there was no day like that before it or after it, when Yahweh hearkened unto the voice of a man. In that, Yahweh, what's the next word? Himself. Fought for Israel. So Joshua returned, and all Israel with him unto the camp of Gilgal, which is real interesting because it all started at night. Could they kept fighting at night? Probably. Yeah, Yahweh on your side, right? Mm-hmm. Sun's going down. Doesn't look like they're going to be able to pursue these guys. Well, maybe we should just wait for the night to go down, and then we'll talk to Yahweh, go back to war at night. Joshua goes, No. Sun, stand still. Jesus Christ told the storm to hush. I'm trying to take a nap. Shh! And the storm went. It hushed. They went back to sleep and they were like, what manner of man is this? That he can hush the storm. Pretty neat, right? Moses took his staff and split the Red Sea. Not only did he split it, then he washed away the Egyptians with it. Ah, I'll wash those guys. Isn't that nice? Better hand sanitizer. Then what does Joshua do here? Has anybody ever done anything like this before? Do you know how much bigger the sun is than the earth? It's 109 times larger than the earth. Our earth would be like a speck of sand, and the sun would be like a basketball. That's how much bigger our sun is than us. Did you know that? And a little bitty, titty, titty, tiny little ant that's on that piece of sand told the sun to stop moving. You stop moving! And you too! Both of you! And what happened? It stopped. And here's what's really neat about the sun. This says right here, so the sun was still and the moon stayed. Do you know what the Greek word stayed is here? E.W. Bulmer says, waited silently. Have you ever seen somebody tell an elephant to sit or do a trick? Is that neat?
Yeah.
What authority? How do you tell an elephant to sit? Isn't that neat? I saw a horse roll over once. It was really cool. This little cute girl comes out and she goes, roll over. And this big draft horse rolls over and you're like, wow, that's authority. Joshua told the sun, moon, you guys don't go anywhere until we get done with this. And Yahweh did. Had anybody done anything like that before him?
No.
Does that take faith? Mm-hmm. Who wrote this now? Did Joshua or Yahushua know that? And how long did the sun stay still? 5 minutes? Did he put him in timeout for 5 minutes? So the sun stayed in the middle of the heavens and hastened not to go in about a whole day.
24 hours.
What kind of guy was this Joshua, this Yahushua? What kind of faith? Verse 16, so these five kings fled. This is the longest day ever. We get paid overtime. And they hid themselves in a cave in Makkada. What are the odds? The terrorists are hiding in a cave. Saddam Hussein, Bin Laden, where are they? They're hiding. What happened when Goliath's head got cut off? Did the Philistines honor their word and become slaves? No, they ran and hid. The terrorists run and hide right now. Oh, the terrorists is always about fear, fear. They don't fear anything. Right. Yeah, it's an image. They'll run and hide too. So these five kings and this confederacy, where they went and hide in, they hid in the closet. And it was told unto Yahushua saying, the five kings are found, hid in a cave at Makkada. And Yahushua said, roll ye great stones against the mouth of the cave and set it over men to watch them. But ye, do not ye stay. Chase after your enemies, so shall ye attack them in the rear. Do not suffer them to enter their cities, for Yahweh your Elohim hath delivered them into your hand. And it came to pass when Joshua, or Yahushua, and the sons of Israel had made an end of smiting them with a very great slaughter until they were spent, they did the remainder that were left of them into the fortified cities. And all the people returned to the camp unto Joshua at Makkada in peace. None sharpened. Mom, would you read verse 21 out of the King James?
All the people returned to the camp to Yahushua at Makkada in peace. None moved his tongue against
him. None moved his tongue. Okay, read that. What's the next translation to the right of that? You can read any one of them and just announce what translation. None moved his tongue.
None moved his tongue. No one uttered a word against. No one uttered a word against.
No one uttered a word against. None moved his tongue. None moved. Came and read verse. What did it say about his tongue in verse 21? Yeah.
And all the people returned unto the camp unto Joshua at Makkada in peace. None sharpened his tongue.
That doesn't sound anything like the NIV, the King James, the Amplified, or the New Revised Standard. They said nobody moved their mouth. Nobody spoke or anything. He said nobody sharpened his tongue. Have you ever sharpened your tongue?
Nope.
Have you ever sharpened your tongue? Do you think there might be a riddle here? Do you think there might be a treasure here? What does that mean? Here's the Hebrew word for sharpened. How wonderful is E.W. Bulmer. This is E.W. Bulmer's the greatest study Bible in the world back here. This is a Rotherham. Rotherham is the most accurate literal translation of our Yahweh's word. And you see, none sharpened his tongue. What does that mean? Let's just take a look at this Hebrew word. The Hebrew word is haras. Okay? The theological word in the theological word book 752. Now I'm going to read a couple of different things. Basic, this is what this word is. Basic to the meaning of haras are the concepts to cut or sharpen and to decide. The connotation to cut is most clearly seen in Leviticus 22:22, where the word occurs in proscription against the use of maimed animals or sacrifice. The former meaning is represented in the noun haraus and the Akkadian conjugate haraousa, which means to cut off. None cut their tongue. Other usages of the word with the connotations of cut occur more metaphorical passages in Joshua 10:21. The word is used in an expression which means to speak against. The translation moved, King James, ASV, RSV, has little support either in Hebrew or the Akkadian usage. This says, neither moved his tongue. That's wrong. It's just wrong. It said, none sharpened or cut. The expression literally means to sharpen the tongue. What translation says that? One translation translated all the rest of the translations messed up. And evidently connotes speaking against another with hostility. The same meaning seems to be inherent in the word used in Exodus 11:7, where it is used of a dog and expresses the idea of an angry growling. In 2 Samuel 5:24, David was commanded to be sharp. It's the same word. When he heard a sound in the trees, as he was quick to act. So he was getting ready. Yahweh says, don't attack him from the front. Wait till you hear the sound in the mulberry trees. Then be sharp. It's the same thing. Hmm. You ever heard somebody, I've heard of that, where they got a sharp tongue. Mm-hmm. The words they say hurt. The concept he decides to determine is clearly evident in 1 Kings 20:40, where one decides his own judgment. In all other instances, the word connotates a concept of determined and referred to something that cannot be changed. Perhaps the basic idea of cut is evident here, in that which it is incised cannot be altered. It didn't mean that the guys were silent. It could have meant that they said, Yahweh is Elohim, Yahweh is Elohim. What do you guys want? We'll do whatever you want. That's moving your tongue. But nobody had a sharp tongue against them because they saw who backed it up. So that's the theological word book of the Old Testament. On the Hebrew word, harash, you would have never saw it. Thank you, Joseph Rotherham. Verse 22. Then said Yehoshua, open ye the mouth of the cave and bring out to me these five kings. Who are the five most wicked people that we know of right now? Kim Jong-il. Is that his name? North Korea, probably. Vladimir Putin. Barack Obama. Who's in charge of ISIS? Just pick. You got two other people. Here are these guys that say, you Christians, you keep it in the closet. You better keep your mouth shut. You better do what we say. Here's Barack Obama, the biggest adversary of Jesus Christ in the United States. All the rest of this stuff. Will he be intimidating? To most Christians, they're going to go, ooh, Barack speaks, you better keep your mouth shut. And so here's some of these kings. Who are they speaking against? They're not speaking against you. They're not speaking against me. They're speaking against our boss. And the land that they stand on belongs to him. So what happened to these guys? And they, was that verse 23?
Yeah.
And they did so and brought out unto him these five kings out of the cave, namely the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, the king of Eglon. And it came to pass, when they brought out these kings unto Joshua, what was the first appearance of these five kings? Scary? Think about ISIS. Who would like to go spend a weekend with ISIS today? That's scary, right? Here comes ISIS, and they're wearing like pink dresses now, kneeling down. Get down on your knees. What does Joshua say to them? Unto Joshua, and Joshua called for all the men of Israel and said unto the captains of the men of war who had been with him, "What? Come near." What's it say next? A kid.
You put your feet on the pile of necks of these kings.
What did he tell them to do to those kings?
Put their feet on their necks.
Here's Yahweh telling you, put your foot on the neck of Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, who tells you better keep your mouth shut or we're going to send an ACLU against you. Really? Well, I think I'm going to go over the head of the ACLU. Here's Joshua, who puts them all down and they all step on their necks. So they came near and put their feet upon the necks of them. Then said Joshua unto them, do not fear, nor be alarmed. Be firm and bold, for thus and thus will Yahweh do unto all your enemy against whom ye do fight. And Yehoshua said the same thing that Yahweh told him. Do not fear. This is Yahweh's war. It's his battle. And if we're with him, who can stand against us? It's the same as Egypt. And how cool was that for Joshua that night? When the sun finally did set. Do you think that was a long day for Israel?
Yeah.
Do you think everybody was exhausted? Yeah. Do you think that Yahweh was put into a spotlight? What in the world just happened? That was... It would be like Alaska. You go, man, how cool is that? You thought the Red Sea was something. Here it looked like they're getting ready to get wiped out. And Yahweh used it as another thing for his resume. Going, you guys haven't seen anything yet. You got to go, what kind of power? There's a buck behind this camera that my brother and I, we brought it in with our words. We said, you belong to my father. You come to me. This buck 600 yards away running around. And Mark 11:24 says, speak as though you already had it. So I'm forcing myself to smile like I already got it. Aaron, how would you look if that buck really came to you? I'm so excited. But I can't move. I'm in camouflage. I'm speaking. You belong to my father. Come, buck, come. And I'm speaking in tongues, which is a perfect prayer. And he's coming. And we didn't know what was going to happen. And you know what happened at the last second? He got close enough and he jumped over the fence. I leaned forward. And as he was walking, my brother went... The buck stopped to look over at us. I squeezed the trigger. I got a next shot. I have a hypothesis on my next shots. I think this is Yahweh's signature. I think I missed, and he probably helped me out a little bit. Because a lot of my shots are neck shots. He drops. And we got done with this, and we go, how strong would a man have to be to try to reel in a buck on a string? You couldn't do it. How much power is it to pull in a wild animal that could stomp the two of us just like this? This is a 300-pound animal. Is that power? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, how neat is that to be able to pull those things in? Joshua stopped the sun from moving. And the moon. How long? He said, and they waited silently. Who did Joshua represent? The moon and the sun's boss. Ooh, who spoke? Who's Joshua? That's Yahweh's right hand man. Oh, okay, I better get up. Whenever you're ready, Joshua, we'll get back to work. You ever seen that with an animal or a dog? Here's a big Rottweiler pit bull, and a baby comes up and starts mauling on it, pulling on its ears, and the big dog looks at the owner like, because the baby has authority. And so do we have authority similar to this. Now turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 4.
Okay.
2 Corinthians.
New Testament.
What's really neat as you start reading that is to think, David always inquired of Yahweh before he went to war. So should we. But David had an advantage over Yahushua, didn't he? David read what Yahushua did. David learned from Yahushua he made a mistake with Ai. Right? So it's not really fair when David and Yahushua get to meet. Yahushua's going to be like, hey, some of your credits belongs to me. You stood on my shoulders with some of that, David. You can see him joking around a little bit. But who else read about Yahushua? There's a guy named Gideon. And guess what Gideon did? Gideon read about Joshua, Yahushua, going to war at nighttime. You can't go to war at nighttime. This isn't like today's military where you got tracers and stuff. You can't go. And Gideon goes, how can you go to war at nighttime? And his father probably would have said, Dad, or his son, if Yahweh's on your side, you can do anything. Really, Dad? Yeah. Gideon, did you know that the same Joshua who went to war at nighttime stopped the sun and the moon? Really? Yeah. Wow. There's Gideon. And what did Gideon do when he went after the Midianites? He went at night. That's impossible. Now think about that. With Desert Storm, what was the big advantage? At least I remember I was really young. They said it was a night war with Iraq. They can't see us. They're getting nuked. We have night vision and stuff. Now, Tim was there. But I got to see stuff in the history. Going to go, if they can't see, you can see. Is that an advantage? Yeah, at night. NVGs, 13 hours is the same thing. If you watch the movie 13 hours, I really encourage everybody to go watch it. These Muslims are trying to kill these guys, but they don't know that the good guys have NVGs. They can see at night. So these Muslims are hiding behind stuff like this. But it's like, they're like, they don't know that we have, they can see at night. We can see at night, guys. Gideon would have read that. Who else would have read about that? David! David went, who is Goliath? Well, they go, well, you know, Goliath's 10 and a half feet tall, David, and he's a warrior from his youth, and you're just a youth. And David goes, if the sun and the moon have to listen to Joshua, that's a little bit bigger than Goliath. Who is Goliath? And the sun and the moon, how big is the sun and the moon compared to the galaxy, the Milky Way? It's nothing. You can't even see it. Huh. So David would have read about that and goes, man. 1 Corinthians 4, verse 13. If somebody would read that for me. Page 183.
Second Corinthians chapter 4, verse 15.
You
were there,
honey.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and then, before you get started, this, the whole chapter of 2 Corinthians chapter 4, do you know what this is? This whole chapter of chapter 4 reminds me of Joshua's situation. You know what it also reminds me of? David's situation. Was David in a good situation when the Philistines were there? No. How about Gideon? How about Moses? He goes hemmed in, pressed. But it's real interesting. Verse 8. You're in a tight spot. Yeah. So what? But now you go read verse 13.
Okay. How but seeing that we have the same spirit of faith, according to that which is written, I believe, therefore I spake. We also believe, therefore also we speak.
In verse 8, or verse 6, it says, because the God who said, out of the darkness light shine, is He who has shone in our hearts. How did the light even get there in the first place? Yahweh spoke it. So when Joshua took over control over the sun, is that really that big in Yahweh's mind? No, Yahweh started all of it with His Word. And the same Spirit that was in Joshua is where?
In us.
It's in you. The same power that was in Joshua is in Esther Scout Cunningham. The same spirit. We have the same spirit of faith. The same spirit that told Pharaoh. Is Pharaoh a good guy? He was horribly evil. He's wicked, wicked, wicked. And what did Moses tell Pharaoh? I was thinking about all the plagues, and then today as I look at it, he told Pharaoh, your son is going to die. What if somebody went to Barack Obama and says, you either get down on your knees or your two daughters are going to die? Do you think he would take that serious? Yeah. You threatened the dictator's kids, and Moses went to Pharaoh and says, your son is going to die. Do you think Pharaoh got hot? Do you think Pharaoh had ever had his child threatened before? Woo! The same spirit is inside you. The same spirit that told Goliath, I'm going to cut your head off, is inside Melania. The same spirit. Then you go back, which is needed, verse 6, the same spirit that said, light be, is in you. Where's your reference point? David would have studied Joshua. Gideon would have studied Joshua. David probably would have read about Samson. Did Samson kill a lion with his bare hands? And then when a lion gets his dad's sheep, the same spirit's in me. I'm not afraid of a lion or a bear. What's your reference point, King David? The same spirit is inside of us. And the important thing, what does it say? The same spirit of faith. Will you read it one more time?
13. How about seeing that we have the same spirit of faith, according to that which is written, I believe, therefore I speak. We also believe, therefore also we speak.
It says, if you believe, what will you do? Speak. You shouldn't have to tell people what you believe. They should already know what you believe. I have been guilty of saying, this is what I believe. And sometimes I say that, people go, you really believe that? They should have already known what I believe. Have you ever done that? I believe this. And they go, are you serious? I read that scripture and I went, everybody I know should know what I believe. And when I say something, they should go, how could this be? Believe, if you believe it, you'll speak it. Say, I have the same spirit of faith. Say it.
I have the same spirit of faith.
Say it.
I have the same spirit of faith.
Say it.
I have the same spirit of faith.
Say it.
I have the same spirit of faith.
Say it.
I have the same spirit of faith.
What's Romans 10:17 say about faith? You need some more faith? You're going to have to kill a giant? Yeah. Tim Adana just killed a giant. How do you get more faith? Faith comes by?
Hearing.
It didn't say faith comes by knowing. By hearing. I have the same spirit of faith. The same spirit that said, Lazarus, arise! And Lazarus got up. And he still probably stunk because the clothes that was on him. And a mummy comes walking out. And he goes, untie him. They're probably freaking out a little bit. He goes, untie that guy. Come on, those things stink. Lazarus, you need a bath. What just happened, guys? The same spirit that told Lazarus to get up is in you. The same spirit that told Adam and Eve, wake up, guys. My twin babies. Adam and Eve, hi, guys. Who are you? I'm your dad. Wow, where's everybody else? You're the first ones. Really? Yeah, don't you see? I got a little trademark. You know, you'll see this on cups. You'll see like an R or a T means trademark. They go, what is it? He goes, there's no belly button. Oh, look at that. Are you sure about that? He goes, yeah. See if you ever meet anybody else with no belly button. Okay, Eve, you got that. Okay, no belly button. We're the first. Yeah, the same spirit is in you. The same spirit is in you. Faith comes by hearing. And hearing the spoken word, the rhema. Jesus Christ breathed and He spoke. He says, receive ye Holy Spirit. What were the disciples learning? They were learning to forget what they were taught. The traditions of men that says if you don't wash your hands and you are not even a... Yahweh doesn't even look at you. And Jesus Christ went, traditions of man, get rid of the traditions of man. You are the temple of the living God. Where does it say that? When you look at Joshua telling the sun to stop still, where was Yahweh living?
Inside Joshua.
Inside Joshua. Who does the sun work for?
Yahweh.
That's right. You are the temple of the living God. And if Yahweh be for us, then who could be against us?
No one.
When we look at these things, we look at what is Yahweh giving us for our warfare? What is the helmet called? The helmet of salvation. How does it work? Well, I knew what these things are. It wasn't until Yahweh just taught him, 38-year-old man. I put scriptures inside a bottle of oil. And I said, I'm going to saturate this oil with Yahweh's promises, is what I thought. I didn't know what I was doing. And then I go, ha, now this oil is being saturated. It's avocado oil now. Don't tell anybody. Now it's saturating Yahweh's promises. And then I took it out and I rubbed it on my head. And I said, I have the helmet of salvation. Then Yahweh goes, what does that mean, Aaron? What do you mean? He goes, are you saved? Yeah. It works if you think about it. What do you got on you? I have salvation. Wow. I'm kind of invincible a little bit, right? Wow. And then he goes, then I go, okay, I took the oil. I have the breastplate of righteousness. What does that mean? Aaron, are you being righteous? Well, you mean I don't always have this on? No. If you're not being righteous, you don't have a breastplate on, buddy. That's not how it works. Oh, man. You mean as long as I'm righteous, I have a breastplate that's like brass that covers all my internals? Yeah. Are you being righteous? Then I got a breastplate on. I put on the belt of truth. The belt holds everything together. Your sword, everything gets held together. If it's what? Traditions? If you're going into war with the traditions of men, everything's going to fall apart. Including me. Mm-hmm. You want to go to war? I believe, therefore I speak. I got the belt of truth. I have the glad message. You're going to go, are you bringing the glad message? Yes, then I got the shoes of the glad message. Then I got, what is the sword of the Spirit? What is the sword? What is the sword of the Spirit? Anyway. What is it?
Word.
It's the spoken word. It's the spoken word. Oh, I got a sword. What is it? Oh. It's like having a lightsaber and never pushing the button. What is it? Oh, I got a sword, though. Oh, that's really going to help you against Darth Vader. You don't know how to push the button. What is it? It's the spoken word. You speak it. You speak it in faith. What is the shield of faith? If you're going into battle, do you believe His word? Do you believe? Do you believe you have salvation? Do you believe you are the temple of the living God? Do you believe that the God that lives inside you is bigger than any circumstance? Is He bigger than a Red Sea? Yeah. Wow. That's faith. Did David have faith? Yeah. Look what that guy did. How did David kill 10,000? Man, who kept count? Yeah, he kept count. How cool is that? That's great. He keeps scores. And then Saul got his 1,000 and go, man, look at all these things in the war. Look at the back of the word haras, which is neat. It says their tongues they did not sharpen. I think that Christians... Warriors. Hey, just because you don't acknowledge that you're a warrior and you're in warfare doesn't mean you're out of it. You're in war. All of us are. Kids are. But the kids, do you believe Yahweh's word?
Yeah.
Then who can stand against you?
No.
Can you stand in the gap for your mother and your father?
Yeah.
How does Yahweh speak to you?
Like a
Very good. Is it, Is it peace or is it confusion? If you're going to go fill a gap for somebody, can you be in peace or confusion? Usually you're going to be in confusion. You've got to get out of it. You've got to go find a peaceful place and you go talk like Joshua did. I believe that we should actually harass our tongues. We should be sharpening our tongues. They said nobody sharpened their tongues against anyone of Israel because who stood behind them? You better get down. By speaking in faith, I believe also that we have the sword, which is a spoken word. But it really only works if you act like you believe. You got to walk out and believe. David, Yahweh showed up after David showed up. And Yahweh's already there, but it's like he showed up. Yahweh didn't act until David did his first, or Joshua did his first thing. He got together, got everybody together. Here's all this stuff. And then he did show up. Then he got a sword of the Spirit. Well, what does that mean? It's a spoken word. Okay. I believe if a little girl can hold up a sword, and she'd hold the same sword as me, but if she doesn't exercise the sword, who's going to win that? Should you be exercising your sword? Yeah, absolutely. And if you speak the word in faith, according to the promises, you can become a samurai warrior with Yahweh's word. And that's who these people were. Joshua, Gideon, David. They exercise this every day. Are you ministering health to dead plants? Are you telling dead bugs to get up? How can I tell a bug to get up? Because the same spirit that told that bug to come into being is in me. Are you telling the traffic lights to go green? Do you need it? Well, I do, but I really got to go pee. It's red. Let's speak to the traffic lights. Speak to the genes. Exercise. And the point is to be exercising your faith in small things so that when you do get to the big things, you go, I'm already ready for the war. I've been through these things. And then, which was neat. And then as you look at all these things, as a reference point is in the Word, the same Spirit that Joshua, he told, son, I said sit. And here's the sun and the moon are like, ooh, ooh, boy. Here's someone, we haven't heard anybody talk like that since Adam and Eve. What are you going to do, moon? Oh, I ain't moving nothing, man. And then after a whole day, the sun and the moon went back to the orbit. What kind of power? The same power is in you. I'll give a prophecy from the audience. Know that I am your father, and that nothing will make sense without the reference points that I have given to you. For the desires that I put in your heart will make sense when you walk out in faith. But you must use the reference points that I've given you. I've given you so many scriptures. You have to search the Word. There's hidden treasures that are in there. And as you do this, remember that I am inside you and I am inside the room. I am waiting for you to open the book as I stand over you. I will show you where the scriptures are so you don't know where the books are. The author is in the room. Let me show you these things. Let me teach you these things so that you may have success and you may overflow with blessings and joy so that other people look at you and want to emulate you. And for those who really want to know the truth, you'll become a beacon of hope.